Well, good afternoon, my friends, or I don't know why I always say that. Actually, I do know why I always say that. I always say that because it's always afternoon here in Ojai when I first say hello to you. But hello anyway, whether it's afternoon, evening, morning, or some other time where you are. I'm happy to be here. I'm happy to see you guys here. I see that there are actually quite a few people here whose names are unfamiliar to me, which I am going to assume means that we haven't met or spoken to each other directly before. And that's a good thing because it gives me a chance to try one more time to say directly and simply in such a way that it is easy to hear, easy to understand, easy to see what it is that I am trying to get at. Because it's my sense that this teaching, this practice, this activity that we call self-inquiry should be so easy to speak about and so easy to offer clearly and understandably that just having heard it once should, it seems to me, produce in the mind that hears it at least a curiosity and at least some curiosity about whether there is any possibility really that something so simple, so easy, so direct, so uncomplicated could have such profound effects on the life. It should be easy. I should be able to say something that you, when you hear it, you say, oh, right, right. I want to try that. I want to see whether there's anything to this without it triggering in you spiritual associations and understandings and advanced spiritual understandings and religious understandings and all of that. Those things are all fine, but they really are absolutely 100% beside the point in self-inquiry. The spiritual practices, the spiritual teachings, the spiritual understandings, the spiritual experiences, the all of that are quite beautiful and quite wonderful and well worth pursuing. But they are beside the point in what we are talking about. So I'd like to find a way, as I said, and let me repeat myself, to be able to say something about this adventure, this self-inquiry, that would immediately, you'd immediately get the essence of what I'm asking you to do, and without it being covered by previous understandings and previous descriptions of things. So I'm always happy for the opportunity to start fresh. So here it is. And by the way, and if you're unfamiliar with me, you'll find out soon enough that I talk a lot and I digress a lot, as I am doing right now. And now I forget what it was that I was going to say, which is also common characteristic with me. So let me just start. We come into this life, into this world, with no possibility of, you know, given the circumstances of our life and given the nature of being born a human being and a human baby body, that we have no chance whatsoever of considering the possibility, any possibility, other than the fact that we are this human body, this human being, this human life. I mean, what else could we think? Here we are, looking out of these human eyes, screaming our human lungs out, looking for food and attention and love and so forth, to be directed at this human body, this human person. So we come into this life, we have no alternatives in which we can say, well, maybe we're human, maybe we're not human. We are compelled to hold the deep, deep belief that we are these lives, these thoughts, these experiences, these actions, this history, this expectations, these hopes, that this is what I am, this array, this display of rising and falling thought, sensation, desire, and aversion. So we set out, of course, we want to be happy. We don't want to be unhappy. Nobody wants to be unhappy. Everybody wants to be happy. So we start out standing on the certainty that we are this human being, trying with all of our hearts to find what we have to do to get happy, to get satisfied, to get fulfilled, to be rid of the sense that there's something missing in me. And we're told by our parents and by society and our teachers and our those who know better, or so they think and so we think. We are given suggestions as to what we can do to find happiness, to find love, to find relationship, to gain understanding, to get money, to get material security in the life, to be able to get the things that are fun to do and that feel good, to understand things. They come at us from all sides with ideas of how it is that we can become happy as human beings and what we have to do in these lives, to these lives, to these bodies, to these minds, to these thoughts and habits and so forth, what we have to do to these lives in order that they will be happy and free and free of the undercurrent of fearfulness and anxiety that is present when we're not happy. Actually, it's present when we are happy too. And all of these ideas are ideas that have been tried again and again and again to no avail. Education, material success, relationship, sex, drugs, rock and roll, religion, surrender, not surrender, meditation, enlightenment. And nothing works. And we know, of course, that it's because we haven't figured it out yet. We don't quite have it together as to either the things that we need to get we haven't gotten, the things we need to understand we have found it impossible to understand, the experiences that we need to attain and that we aspire to don't come to us, the relationships that would make us happy are missing in action, the sex is bad, the drugs are bunk, and the rock and roll is off key. And that's the way our lives go. Always trying. Always trying some way to make these lives right. Never looking back, never once looking back to the fundamental underlying assumption that drives everything, which is the assumption that we are human, that we are these human lives. Why would we ever look back at that? That's obvious. It's unthinkable that we are anything other than that. And we are unhappy. And we are driven by fearfulness and anxiety. And we find outlets for that, and we find momentary relief from it, and we find things to do to distract us from it, and so forth. But underlying all is this river of fearfulness and anxiety that makes us ever aware, ever watchful, certain that the next thought that I think might do it, or the next thought that I think will probably be my doom. Always watching, always, always, always on guard, lest we be taken by surprise, lest we miss our opportunity or miss the opportunity to dodge the bullet. And so it goes. Life goes on. For most of us, sometimes life is pretty good, sometimes life sucks, always it's not what I want it to be. And for most of us, it's like this for all of our lives. Good times, bad times, and in the end, no time. Gone. And we hear these stories, we hear these magnificent stories of spiritual enlightenment and self-realization and awakening and sunyata and bliss. Ah, the bliss and love. We hear these stories that come from ancient times about the possibility within these human lives to be free of the constraints of these human lives, the possibility to attain enlightenment or self-realization or awakening or whatever. And we try. It doesn't work. We get good experiences. We've had some of the most breathtaking, unbelievable experiences and spiritual practices, but they go away, leaving us bereft, as we have always been. You know, and if it wasn't that the spiritual arena is so fundamental, we could probably enjoy it better. If it wasn't that it seems to hold out the ultimate promise for redemption or transformation or transcendence or whatever. If it wasn't for that, we could enjoy what we get from it. But it's too important for enjoyment. So we keep at it. We keep trying to find the right relationship. We keep trying to find the right spiritual practice for the right God, for the right therapy, for the right understanding. For the right amount of money. Never, ever, in all of our efforts, can it even occur to us to check and see whether there's any truth to this assumption that what I need in order to be happy is to have something happen in this life, have it change, have my mind change, or disappear, or die. Never once questioning that fundamental assumption that happiness is to be found in the life, that satisfaction is to be found in the life, in something happening in the life, in something changing, in something new. Always we are looking for something new. Something new. But I tell you from my own direct experience, having really struggled to understand what Ramana Maharshi was getting at, I tell you from my own direct experience that all of that is beside the point, that the only problem, there is no problem in the life at all. I mean, there are problems in the life that are problems that can be worked with or solved or fixed or whatever. But the fundamental problem has nothing to do with what's happening in the life. This fundamental underlying dissatisfaction that never goes away, it recedes. It's, you know, we can deny it and we can push it down, but it never goes away. This fundamental underlying dissatisfaction, nothing that happens in the life can have a hope of doing anything about that. Nothing. The wildest, most wild, indescribable spiritual breaking open. When it's done, we are left wanting more. The most delicious human relationship, when off to ourselves, is not enough. Mountains of money, when facing ourselves in the mirror in the morning, does nothing to reduce this deep conviction that there's something missing, that there's something not here, that there's something I'm being denied. Nothing that happens in the life can change that. Nothing that happens in the life can make that go away. Everything that happens in the life is beside the point to that. Because that arises from this ancient, unseen, unacknowledged, uninvestigated conviction that we are the life. And if that's wrong, then everything that happens in the life is obviously beside the point. This conviction that we are this life is the only problem. If it's not true, then what needs to be done? If it is true, then what can be done? I tell you, it's a lie. This underlying conviction that we are these lives gives rise within these lives itself, this experience and sensational phenomenon of feeling at stake here. Like, what happens in the life matters. It's going to hurt me, or it's going to help me. If I do the right thing, I'm going to get something good. If I do the wrong thing, I'm going to get something bad. It is this conviction that we are the life that produces this endless watchfulness, this endless anxious determination to keep away the bad and hold on to the good. And that's all. And I tell you, it's a lie. And everybody has told us all that it's a lie. And if it is a lie, nothing that happens in the life can touch that lie. No amount of understanding even that is a lie can destroy the lie. The only thing that can destroy the lie is exposure to the truth. Just that. Exposure to the truth. Not understanding the truth. Not knowing the truth. Just exposing this lie to the light of the truth, which is the truth of what you are. And that's easy. And the thing about this teaching and the thing about this practice and the possibility here is that it doesn't ask you, okay, give up everything else you're doing now, because all of that's no good and you got to turn all of your attention to self-inquiry. You got to let go of all your old teachers and all your old teachings and all your old practices and all your old habits. You don't have to let go of anything. Don't have to hold on to anything. All you have to do is expose the lie to the light of the truth, and you do that by looking at yourself. Just that. Looking at yourself. Looking at the reality of yourself. Just for a second. Doesn't have to be like a samadhi. Just for a second, look at the reality of yourself. What are you, really? Are you here? Of course you're here. Of course you are. You're always here. You're never absent. And the only thing that's never absent is you. You're here. You exist. You know it. There is underlying this whole show, underlying this whole magnificent manifestation, there is underlying all of it a clear, simple, unadorned, unmoving, unchanging presence that never goes away, that never changes. That's you. And the problem in talking about this comes because when I say this, I can hear it being heard as, make the conscious, direct seeing of the reality of what I am permanent. And that ain't it. It's already permanent. You are permanent, and there's never been a moment in this entire existence that you have not been fully aware of the reality of what you are, fully aware of this presence. You're always aware of it. The awareness itself is unseen. The presence itself is ignored and most often despised because it's so ordinary. But you're always here, and you always see that. You absolutely always know that. So all that's called for in self-inquiry is not to make permanent your awareness of the reality of what you are, because that already is permanent. It's just to look at that, just for a second, every chance you get. And in the direct looking at it with the conscious mind, you let in the light of reality to destroy, disintegrate, wipe out this lie that you are this life. And it takes time. It takes a lot of time for some, almost no time for others, but it always takes time. The lie is long-lasting. It has been present forever, except not. It's been present for all of this life. It is unquestioned. It is never. It is accepted without dispute. So it takes time, sometimes. But I promise you this. I promise you. I cross my heart. I promise you this. If you will, every chance you get, every time it occurs to you to do so, if you will, just stop for a second and see if you cannot consciously perceive this underlying presence in the background that is the foundation and the source of everything, that never moves, that is absolutely simple, has no opinions, has no understandings, has no aspirations, has no aversion. It's the light of awareness. And if you will do that, I promise you, if you just look at yourself, not knowing yourself to be awareness, not knowing yourself to be such and ananda, not knowing yourself to be anything or nothing, just look at this presence as often as it occurs to you to do so. And I promise you that the day will come when this underlying current of fearfulness and anxiety that is the visible symptom of the presence of the lie that you are the life, this fearfulness and anxiety will be gone. You'll be glad. And you'll laugh. And nothing will change except what always changes. Your mind, your thoughts, your ideas, the body, your desires, your opinions, and so forth, they will change. But that apparatus won't change except insofar as it does. Pain and hardship will still come and go. Pleasure and grace will still come and go in your life. But what will not return is the feeling that you are at stake in this life. And as that feeling goes away, you will find how really, really wonderful it is to be in this human life. You will find how really magnificent it is to have a human form and presence that's not you, that's your tool, your instrument. And if you continue spiritual practices, you will find that they are much more satisfying than they ever were. If you continue sex, drugs, and rock and roll, you'll probably find that they're much better than they ever were. Look at yourself. Get rid of this idea that you're this life. You can't talk yourself out of it. The only thing you can do is look at yourself. And it doesn't take much. It takes just every time it occurs to you. And once it starts, it'll proceed. You think you forgot about it, and then it'll come back. Once it starts, it'll continue on its own. It'll occur to you to do it more often. And the day will come when you will realize that it has been a while since I have been unhappy. It's been a while since I have been filled with anxiety and fearfulness. It's been a while since I have hated my life. So, self-inquiry in a nutshell. Maybe we could do a book, Self-Inquiry for Dummies. Self-inquiry in a nutshell. The only problem. It's a false belief that you are this life. That's the claim. You mustn't take that as a belief. No belief has ever done you a bit of good. The only problem is a false belief that you are this life, this mind, this body, this history, so forth. That belief produces all of the suffering and misery in your life. The only solution is the truth, the exposure of the lie to the light of truth, which infallibly destroys it. The truth, of course, since the issue is what you are, the truth is the reality of what you are. The way to bring about the exposure of the lie to the light of the truth is to consciously take your mind, this human mind, and look at yourself. Get a feeling, an experience, a glimpse of this presence in the background that's never missing, that never goes away. That's self-inquiry in a nutshell. Look at yourself every chance you get. Every time the idea occurs to you, stop for a second. Wherever you are, stop for a second and get a drink from this taste of presence. And everything will turn out right in the end. And that's the promise. So I'd love to hear from you. I'd love to talk to you and try to clarify anything that I have made hopelessly confusing. Try to help you if you are having problems. Try to just be of service to you. That's what I'm here for. So if you would like to speak to me, Carla has told you how to go about doing that. And I don't remember exactly how that is, but please do so. I'm happy to talk to you. I'm happy to be here with you.
Okay, our first caller is Steve. He's calling from Hull in the United Kingdom.
Hello, can you hear me now?
Hi, Steve.
First of all, thank you. Yes, the message, the direct inquiry, I've been trying that. I understand some of the things you say, and I understand that most of what we think we are isn't. It's just thoughts, it's just ideas, and that we can allow awareness of something that you cannot speak about beyond that. My difficulty is this surely requires a body, it requires senses. It's this question of consciousness being aware of itself. I just cannot see or understand how that could happen. In which case, what is the point? If when you die, there is no body. If consciousness is aware of itself, then it will be anyhow. If it isn't, it isn't. Therefore, what is the point?
Well, the point is to enjoy your life. That's that is the entire point to all of it, is to enjoy this life just as it is. That's the point. No other point whatsoever. And there's no need to do it. There's no skin off anybody's nose if we all walk around still immersed in the conviction that we are these lives. Nobody's hurt.
I understand, and I also understand what you were saying about self-inquiry sort of works effectively on its own after a while, but it still does seem to require an element of faith. Not in a religious sense, but in the sense that there is a consciousness which is aware of itself, and it isn't just the body in quiet awareness with no thought or little thought, just ticking in admittedly a very pleasant way.
I don't understand what the question is.
The question is the self-inquiry process may take the rest of your life, and being goal-orientated, I suppose, it may just be another thing to do, because without a person who is aware of something, there is nothing. There is just experience with a body, and it sort of deflates the whole point of any sort of quest or understanding.
It won't take the rest of your life. I mean, acceptance in the kind of metaphysical sense that self-inquiry has actually been going on already for all of your life, and there really is nothing to life except looking at yourself. There's nothing to the appearance of human beings except a way in which you can look at yourself. But the aspect of the inquiry that removes the thorn out of your side, that is the belief that you are the life, you can't see that. And no amount of understanding will bring it to its knees. But the self-inquiry that will infallibly remove that thorn, that is that belief, that doesn't take the rest of your life. That takes, well, it took a while, a year or so for me, but for others it takes weeks. It's unpredictable in that sense, but it really doesn't take forever. The self-inquiry that seeks to remove the belief is just like working to get a thorn out of your side. And when it's gone, then that aspect of self-inquiry is gone also, but you remain, as you always have. Bodies come, bodies go, you remain. And the only point to self-inquiry is to remove that thorn. That's all. It's not to become something else. It's not to become what you're not. It's just to remove that thorn. Do you follow me?
Yes. I mean, as I said at the beginning, I can think of nothing better to do. It's something I found that, well, you can't sit and do it. Sometimes it seems to do you. Sometimes you could sit and try and do it, and it seems to be a complete waste. And I can, in any case, think of nothing better than carrying on with it and seeing what happens. And thank you.
I couldn't agree more. I can't think of anything better to do either. And you're right. Sometimes it does you, and sometimes you do it. But the intent is everything. The intent to bring consciousness to bear on this fundamental underlying issue. The only issue in life is what am I? That's what does it. And I'm happy that you'll keep on doing it. Please let me know how things go for you.
Okay, thanks again, John.
You're very welcome. Anybody else?
Okay, let's try now Nigel, calling from Madrid.
Hi, Nigel, are you there?
Hi, John, yeah.
Well, it's good to see you, man. What's up?
I've been on a rough patch, I'm afraid.
Can you say more?
Yeah, sure. I'm just are you getting an echo at all there?
Yes, it's your speakers. I'm not sure what to do, but your speakers are coming into your microphone is what it is.
Okay, yeah. No, I've just been experiencing it. I think I've told you before that I've got this chronic illness, and it's been giving me a bad time lately. And it tends to be nothing but, well, it is just nothing but pain, and it just makes the practice, I don't know, the will to become present, you know. It feels sometimes like you, I don't know, against the current. It feels more against the current. But I must say that the motivation is there and is strong, and I know it's, you know, the only solution, but it just seems to be never-ending, you know.
Yeah, pain is no fun. And pain is a characteristic of the human bodies, and, you know, anything that we can do to alleviate it or fix it or cure it is good. But, you know, in the end, if pain can't be, snuffed out, you're still here. And the reality is that when pain is present, and even when it is present for such a long time that it gets so old, and so old, but even then, you're here. You can't be present. You are presence itself. So I hope that the pain can be, something can be done about the pain. But the inquiry will proceed, and I suspect is proceeding, without regard to the pain. I can't help the pain. But I do know that pain or no pain, you remain the same. You're untouched by the pain. You're unhelped by any of the good stuff. And you know that too, I think.
Yes, I know. But it's, I don't know, I suppose you just get caught up. You get caught up in the negativity of it. But the practice does go on. But the identification with the feeling that I am here very often makes the pain worse. You know, it's easy to be distracted from it, and really there's not a fat lot that I can do to get away from it. You know, there's just no, you know, I'm cornered in a way, and there are just times when it just feels really, really tough, you know.
I know that, I do. And if nothing can be done about the pain, then and you can't distract yourself from the pain, then you have no choice but to, you know, just have pain.
Yes, I'll just sit it out.
what to do? You know, I wish I could take all pain away from the whole world, and I really wish I could take it away from you right now. But keep the practice up.
That's the only saving grace, I think, when this is happening, you know. And then when these attacks sort of leave me, which it may or it may not, but this one's going on for a long time, and when you actually enjoy full health, you know, which happens, it's that's marvelous. I mean, you know, I appreciate, you really appreciate feeling good and being back in the world again, because it really takes you out. It really takes you out of life itself, you know, or just the normal run of life. And but anyway, I've been a bit miserable so this Christmas time, so I'll love and leave you. just wish you a very happy Christmas and a happy Christmas to all the people here. You've got a lot of people here in Satsang today. It's great.
Yes, I'm happy to see that. A lot of new people, too, or at least people I haven't seen before. So enjoy yourself, man. Let me know.
I'll do that, John. All the best. Lots of love to you and Carla.
Thank you, Nigel. I'll talk to you again. Bye.
Okay, Michelle in Vancouver, Canada, wants to try again, see if her microphone works now.
Hi, John. Can you hear me?
I can hear you very well, Michelle. Hi, how are you?
Great. It's awesome to speak to you.
Likewise.
John, when the first guy from UK asked the question about what's the use of the body, isn't the body important because that's how you experience all sensations and all experiences?
Well, maybe I misunderstood what he was asking. I thought he was asking what's the use of self-inquiry. But yes, the body, this body, this human life, you know, there's this thing that seems to be a paradox. Right? One is that this body, this human life, is this magnificent instrument, this magnificent tool whereby we can see each other, whereby we can see this magnificence. There is no way, and I think the guy from the UK also was saying this, there's no way that consciousness or awareness is not aware of itself at all times, but only in this body are we able to see and experience and feel and taste the full range. Not the full range. We can't experience the full range. I mean, but the full range that's available to human bodies of the wonder of existence, the wonder of being itself. And that is the point of the body. That's the reason we take form in these bodies. That's the reason all this takes place, is because awareness cannot abide not to see itself. And yes, I think I'm agreeing with you.
I also want to say, John, that when I first came to you, all I wanted was to be a better sculptor. That was my only interest, and I wanted to be good at my art. And I wasn't interested in self-inquiry. But the first time you said, you are here, I recognized that I was here, and it was an incredible gift that I had not expected you to give, and I got it from you, and it was the most amazing thing that happened in my life. And since then, I have had lots of pain and lots of despair and lots of disappointment and disillusionment. But the thing is, this thing, this awareness that I'm here, has never left me. And so I just want to say, Nigel, hang in there, because you are here.
Very good. I'm very happy to hear that, Michelle. You say it very well. And you are here. So is there anything I can do for you?
I want to wish you and Carla an awesome Christmas and New Year. Have a wonderful, wonderful end of the year.
Actually, we are having a wonderful end of the year. We're very happy and very happy to be here. Thank you, Michelle. You too. To all of you. I don't know. There's something in the Northern Hemisphere about the time around the winter solstice that is really quite delicious, really quite sweet. And so without regard to anything else, I wish all of you, Carla and I both wish all of you the peaceful and joyful and wonderful turning of the season here. This is as we get the sun back. So thank you, Michelle. I'm happy to see you. I hope I see you in person again soon.
Thank you, John.
Okay, anybody else want to talk to me? Don't have to, but I'd love to talk to you.
Now, we have a question from Rose calling from Illinois. Her microphone's not working, so she asked me to ask you the question. As I understand it, what she wrote is, John says we are not our life. What you mean with life, is it the body? And then she asks, can you speak more about how to look for yourself?
First of all, what I mean by the life is absolutely everything. Everything you see, everything you smell, everything you taste, everything you want, everything you don't want, everything you think, everything you forget to think, everything you remember, everything you forget, everything you expect in your life, every understanding you have, every confusion you have, every movement to grab a hold of something and hold it, every movement to push things away. I mean, that everything, every thought, every sensation, everything that you see, taste, feel is your life. It springs into being in the morning with the arising of what Ramana called the I thought, and it ebbs and flows and bounces and plays and shifts and changes and acts like a kaleidoscopic fantasy world for all of your awake time until you go to sleep. And then you dream, and it plays some more. It's everything. It's the body. It's the mind. It's the thoughts themselves. It's the desires. It's the aversions. It's the attractions. It's the irritation. It's the anger. It's the love. It's the hope. It's the hopelessness. It's all of it. That's what I mean by your life. And the belief is that that's you. And that since that's you, the shape of it is desperately important. The things that I think are utterly vital that I get them right. The things that I want, I must want the right things. I must not want the wrong things. I must despise the things that are correct to despise. I must love the things that are correct to love. Belief that I am this life, this whole show here, produces that. So that's what I mean by the life, all of it, everything, nothing left out, inclusive. How to look for yourself. Boy, you know, if I could come up with some, like, okay, you sit down, you close your eyes, you breathe in this fashion, you turn your attention in this fashion to this experience or this object of perception. If I could do that, I would really be happy, but I don't know how to do that because, you see, the problem here is that what you are, the reality of what you are, is not subject to description, naming, understanding, or anything else of that nature. It really isn't subject to experience in the way that we're accustomed to think of gross experience through the body and the nervous system and so forth. What you are is so simple, without complication, and so ever-present, unmoving, doesn't ever leave, it's never gone, so ordinary. You see, that's what ordinary is, ever-present. But I don't even know how to tell you what you're looking for, except you're looking for you. And if I tell you this, I promise you this, if you just took upon yourself the determination to, just for a second, know with absolute certainty what you are, that determination cannot be denied. How you look for yourself, how you look for yourself is follow the determination to see the truth of what you are. How you look for yourself. You look for yourself by bringing to bear your own natural, native intelligence and discernment. That's how you look for yourself. You be determined to see the reality of what you are, and then you bring every strength that you can bring to bear on this investigation, to bear on this investigation. All your discernment, all your intelligence, all your sensibility when you see that, well, wait a minute, that's not me because that wasn't here a moment ago. So that can't be what I'm looking for. Or, you know, like that. This is the adventure, the quest of getting the taste, the glimpse, the light of you in your eyes is just ordinary. You know, you're looking for something that you know is there, and you find out how to do it. You're here. You're not absent. You're here. How do you know that? What is it about your present state that makes you certain that you're here? Look and see. Look to see. Try to look at it. Try to find that certainty. You know, or whatever else comes to your mind. Use your mind. Use it as a tool in this adventure. Where am I? What am I? What does it feel like? And the only purpose of this is not to finally, once and for all, get a full understanding of what you are, but just to open the door a little bit so the light of truth can come in. The light of the truth will do the work. Understanding won't do anything. None of it will do anything. Not even looking at yourself will do anything. It's the light that comes when you see yourself. It's the light of truth that does the work. It's the light of truth that destroys the lie. And I don't know what else to say. Stop for a second. See what's here. See what doesn't change. You don't have to stay there. You don't have to be forever sunk in, I don't know, the bliss of self or the bliss of being. That's not the point of this exercise. The point of this exercise is to open the window and get the light in by looking at yourself. The light does the work. I hope that's helpful. If not, email me. Anybody else want to talk to me?
Now we have Corrado calling from Berkeley, California.
Hi, Corrado.
Hi, Don. Can you hear me?
I can hear you very well. Thank you. What can I do for you?
Okay. Well, I don't really have a question because I feel like there's no one here to really ask a question. I just wanted to offer my gratitude to you for sharing your work and your truth with all of us. And it's my first time here, and I've been actually enjoying the videos that I found on YouTube of some of your talks and satsangs, and they resonated deeply within me, and I'm very happy to just to let you know that. But as a big avid reader of Ramana myself, I just feel like you're doing a great job, and I want to thank you for that. That's all.
Well, I'm really happy to hear that. Thank you very much, Corrado. Were you there? Were you there when we were in Berkeley last year?
No, I wasn't. I traveled the world quite a lot, and I wish and I hope that someday I'll have a chance to actually come to your meetings, since we're not that far away. But hopefully we'll be able to do that soon. But I wasn't here, and I'm sorry to say that.
Okay, well, I'm sure we'll see each other soon. It seems clear to me. Thank you very much, Corrado. You're very welcome. I'm very, very grateful for that encouragement.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
Anybody else?
Okay, now we have Tobias calling from France.
Hi, Tobias. What a pleasure.
Yes, can you hear me, John? Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Tobias.
I have a question, John.
Okay.
Okay, my question is, I will explain. Looking to the here-ness, one can see or experience that it is timeless somehow, or that it is dimensionless, and now it comes out somehow that this here-ness is somehow that what Ramana refers to be the heart. You know, it's like a drop, and everything is inside this drop. There is nothing outside. But it turns out somehow that I am also this life, you know. I can't say in the moment that I am not this life, but I am both, you know. I am somehow this here-ness that is somehow dimensionless and this life. Is this correct?
This is absolutely correct. As I have said, I'm happy to hear this. As I have said, the outcome of the inquiry is not what would be expected. The outcome of the inquiry, instead of producing a dissociation or distance from the life, is an intimacy with the life such as we never could have imagined when we believed that this is where we, that this was us. The intimacy with the life is absolutely unexpected outcome of the inquiry. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, but there is still somehow a rest of this belief. But this belief one cannot really see. I tried such a lot of things to see this belief, but all this belief refers to be is only this ego, this person, this whole life. I cannot explain what happens while one does the inquiry, but somehow it seems to split, but it is no real split. You know, it is like one realizes to be this dimensionless here-ness. But on the other side, one is also this life. It is, I'm not able to explain. There happens something, but one cannot figure out what it is.
Yes, that's right. You can keep trying to say something comprehensible about it, but I've been trying for, I don't know, 10 years now, and I haven't succeeded yet. But if you do, let me know, okay?
Okay, John, I tried. So I did discuss, and I did write thousands of emails also to you, you know. But this all had no meaning in the end. It is just what happens in the mind. I did write thousands of sites, you know, to try to, or the mind trying to figure out what happens in this process. But if one looks back, you know, one doesn't even remember what happened there because there were such a lot of tragedies. They had no meaning. They had all had no real meaning.
Tobias, I love you. That's exactly right. One looks back and can't even remember what it was like. Yes. Okay. Thank you, Tobias.
I thank you very much, John. Your teaching is perfect. I tried to figure out something, you know, to say it this clear, but the way you tell it, it is fantastic. Okay, it takes time. One has to say, for me to come this far, you know, and now it is just, life is somehow sweet, and even if there is aggression or, you know, any feeling, one can stay just with this feeling, you know, because in the end, one isn't this feeling, but on the other side, one is this feeling too, you know. It is, I think some Indians said one time, one is nothing and all, you know, somehow like this, you know.
Yes, and you see from here, the utterances of so many beings become comprehensible. Before here, they were incomprehensible. They were just incomprehensible. They could not be understood. But from here, where you see how utterly impossible it is to say anything true about anything, their utterances actually are seen for what they really are, and enjoy it for what they really are.
Yes, and now I wanted to thank you again, John, and I want to say to all others that do this inquiry, it can really take months, you know. I am now really more than 1 year again in this, in a very intensive way. And to come this far, it did take me really more than 1 year of very intense inquiry and also a lot of strange experiences and of sad experiences and happy experiences. And but this whole process, the mind is also involved too, because it is a very intimate way, you know, to experience oneself. So the mind, the life, always wants to know what is going on and what is about me, and there develop a lot of tragedies. One has just to go on, and it can really take months or even more than a year. You know, for me it did take more than 1 year now, and I'm not totally done. But one has to encourage, I think, weeks, maybe some people, but I think for most it takes at least a month.
Tobias, that is a most valuable thing you have told us all, and I can't tell you how happy I am to hear from you like this.
Okay, John. Okay. Now I will finish and thank you all. And wish you a very nice Christmas.
And likewise to you, Tobias, and all of you, a very nice Christmas, a very nice change of the season, a very nice welcoming of the sun back, which I guess is tomorrow. No, it's today. So thank you, Tobias. It's wonderful to hear from you. Please keep in touch.
Okay, John. Goodbye.
Okay, I think we're going to call it quits now for this meeting. I am, you know, these meetings just knock me out. I'm the beneficiary of all of these meetings. I am so happy to be here with you. I am really happy when I really am your servant. I'm really not trying to be anything except of service to you. So it really makes me happy when I hear from all of you from time to time that well, yeah, you get it, and you see what's available here, what's possible here. I want to tell you that I was just talking to Carla this morning. And I'm beginning to see that these online meetings, which we have every other week, they have some of the same characteristic to them as public meetings, where we meet with people one time, we don't know if we'll ever see them again, and it's pretty much not any time to do much of anything except say as best I can what I have to say. I mean, we spend an hour and a half together, and my sole desire in these meetings is just to get said the encouragement and the invitation to embark upon this adventure of discovering the reality of what you are, or at least of discovering the possibility of looking at yourself to see what effect that has on you, on your life. But we have had in the past here in Ojai, and we haven't had any this year, I don't think, but we have had in the past a thing where we would meet with a small group of maybe 10 or 12 people every week for 5 or 6 weeks, you know, and so that we're able to have some continuity and be able to follow through on some of the questions that arise in public meetings and in our glancing contact with each other. And it occurred to me this morning that actually we could do the same kind of thing using this technology here. So Carla and I are going to look at this in the next couple of weeks or so, come up with an idea as to how we could invite or we could register, say, 10 or 12 people where we could meet together here in this venue every week for a month or so. And we'll let you know if and when that we understand how that could help and how that could be done. In the meantime, I love you all. I am your servant. I am incredibly blessed to have you in my life. Incredibly blessed to see the way in which this invitation to this adventure has taken hold of so many people. Who knows? Maybe we can save the world. Who can tell? Thank you for your time. Thank you for your attention. Please wait for a few minutes. Carla has some things to say to you. And I will see you when I see you, and I will think of you always. I love you. Om Shanti. Goodbye.